This podcast is brought to you by our partners at 8 Star Energy.
8 Star Energy, a clean energy company, leading the future of portable and renewable energy.
To find out more, follow them on Facebook at 8 Star Energy.
I want attacking purpose for football all the time. Now we're going to have backs against the wall and we're going to fight and we're going to fight hard. You've got to show me all the guts and all the determination you've got in your body. You've got to inspire me.
A marvellous kick. That's as good as you'll ever see. And Footscray back in front. From inside the centre square, Boyd's kicked the goal. Boyd's kicked the goal. From inside the centre. I can't believe that.
Welcome, Dogs fans. Welcome to Danny Boyd, the greatest Bulldogs podcast that you will hear today from the top of the table. Here we are. We're getting a nosebleed. We're up here. We're 40 percentage points clear. My name is Danny McGinlay, and please welcome the 78th most games played record holder for GWS, Tom Boyd.
It's great to be here. Very exciting to hold such a prestigious title, a 78th game record holder. It was a short period of time at the Giants, but certainly one that I look back with interest.
Yeah, I've just got up your AFL tables page. You had 3 wins and 6 losses at the Giants.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's not so bad, considering we only won 4 for the year or something.
The X factor, that's what they called you.
Well, I won against the Dogs, so that was nice.
Yeah, all right, play on. Who's our guest, Tom?
Long-time fan of the man we've got in the studio today. So much so that I actually Googled the Gruen transfer recently, and it actually was out in 2008. And there's plenty of things you could say about him, but he's one man that consistently made my dad laugh, which is a pretty mean feat to do. So Will Anderson's in the house.
Thank you. That is the generation I am now of, that I make people's parents laugh. There used to be a time that their parents were young people who came to my shows, and now they're parents. And I have so many people come up to me. I had these wonderful young comedians, and they're called Freudian Nip, and people might be familiar with an incredible skit they did called the Contact Tracys that went viral around contact tracing and young people in contact tracing. Anyway, one of those girls was talking to me about my podcast, and she was like, I'd really love to come on. It'd be the proudest thing I've ever done in my mum's eyes. And I'm like, okay, well, that's where I am at these days, I guess.
Actually, yeah, my parents were excited you were coming on, mostly because they don't give they really don't care about football, and they were just excited to go, oh, we know who that is. Great. So how did you got into Melbourne yesterday?
Yeah, Easter Monday.
Easter Monday.
Easter Monday, just in time for the big Easter Monday football game. So I currently am in a house that has no furniture in it. So it has a bed, but no other furniture in the entire house. So it's very minimalist.
Yeah. Lots of room for activities.
Very Marie Kondo. So I sat on a bed in a house like a Howard Hughes type, just alone in this big empty house, watching the Easter Monday game on my computer screen.
Watching Geelong and Hawthorn, who played a very nostalgic style of football.
Boring old football.
That's the one.
Yeah, goodbye, boring old football. I will ask you this, Tom. Do you think that there's... I mean, by the way, congratulations on being the 78th
thank you.
Highest player at the GWS. And the way that players go in and out of GWS, that's a record that may stand for a very long time.
I'm in that niche, Anna. In that niche of 9 games or whatever it is that not many people reach.
Top 100, you might stay in for a little while. So that's good, exciting times. But, man, this era of football, now that we're seeing what football can be again, and I know that there will probably be games like we saw on Monday where it does get shut down, it is a bit more old-fashioned, and of course when we get into winter it's going to be, you know, heavier ball, it's going to be soggier, the coaches will get their heads around the new rules a little bit more and try to get more defensive, but we've seen what it can be again. And now we have to fight really hard as spectators of the sport to say this is what we want.
Yeah,
we want to be able to turn on any game on the weekend and see free-flowing football, high-scoring football, really exciting football.
Thrillers.
Like full forwards kicking 10 goals.
Yes.
Oh, I mean Josh Bruce kicking 10 goals and full forwards. Yeah. So it's an amazing time to be watching football again. I mean, particularly amazing for us at the moment because it's exciting to be a Doggies fan.
Hell yeah.
But, I mean, look, we were playing North Melbourne. So
yeah.
you know that... You've got to lower your expectations a little bit when even Bevo was like, North Melbourne aren't in a great place. The opposition coach is defending the opposition team.
Go like, easy on them.
Yeah, like, look, they were having a real bad day. A bad year, to be honest. We felt bad beating them up by so much. I mean, we did it, and I'm proud of the boys, but we felt bad about it.
Boydie, you were saying off air that, you know, for your whole career, there was very defensive and structured people just going out of their way to ruin a big forward's day.
Yeah, I mean, like, my career is a good evidence of it, right? Like, being a key forward for my entire juniors and then end up having to play in the ruck essentially to, you know, cater for that sort of football. And I think it's like all brilliant ideas. It's the sort of ideas that come into the game where it's like, why didn't we think of that earlier? You know, it makes so much sense making the man on the mark stand still. Yeah. And it has such a catastrophic impact on the defense's ability to slow the ball up. And it's so much better to watch.
Genius. Like, it's one of those things where, like, because it's so fashionable when they say, oh, no more new rules. Like, they're changing the game too much. No more new rules. Yeah. And at the start of the season, I heard they were bringing that rule and was like, oh, yeah, I suppose that'll make absolutely no difference to the game. Exactly. Oh, no, it's revolutionized everything.
And watch them all circle again. Watch all the senior head circle, like, who came up with it? It keeps going around the media mill and no one's been able to claim it yet. And you watch, someone's going to come out as, like, the person who saved the game at some stage.
It's going to be like the janitor who was just cleaning AFL house and just came across it, like in Good Will Hunting, wrote on the chalkboard.
My big suspicion is, because in these sort of things, if there is a person, so it's got to be someone, most of the people in that organization would love to claim credit.
Of course.
So if no one's claiming credit, you've got to go to the person who's least likely to claim credit. My guess is Steve Hocking. I think that Hocking doesn't like to blow his own horn about what he's doing to the game because he gets some shit wrong as well. Like that's part of, sorry, you'll have to edit that.
No, shit's fine.
Oh, is that fine? Sorry.
You can say shit on the project now.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay. If it's good enough for the project, it's good enough for your podcast. That's a good rule. Okay. And now a change of pace. In India today.
God, I used to do audience warm-up for the project, Tom, and it was just so – like, you know, you'd have Peter Hellyer saying really funny things, and then we cut to Waleed, who does 3 minutes how we're all going to die.
Yeah, just pure monologues. Yeah.
And I got to come out to the crowd and go, hey, what a great crowd. Is anyone in from out of town? Yes, you, sir. Where are you from? Syria. That's awkward.
Okay. I have a counter idea to who might be behind it.
Okay,
so good. If you can't take credit for it, you obviously won't.
Yeah.
So my sense would be that there's a couple of coaches in there who probably had their hand in the matter, and you can't come out and say we changed the game and then be like, oh, it's working pretty well for us. So there's a good chance I'd say that some of the coaches on the coaching panel might have had a bit of a word. I know, like, for a fact that...
Interesting.
Well, after 2016...
Who are you pointing the finger at?
I don't know who it
would
be.
Just speculate wildly.
Reece Shaw, and then they said, that's a terrible idea. You're out.
It's like, you're out of here.
I don't know who... I mean, like, from a suitability point of view, the Dogs make sense, but I don't think Bevo come up with it. But I say, like,
But, you know, Bevo did go pretty strong on the... feeling like he was left out of the emergency sub meeting.
Right,
maybe that was cover. Like, he's in cahoots with the AFL, but to throw people off the scent, he's like, I'm going to complain about this rule I don't care about at all. Oh, yeah, medical subs.
Anyway, we had a big hurrah about the change of the third man up in the ruck rule, obviously, after 2016, which just decimated our ability to sort of, you know, play without a significant ruckman. And that came from, you know, the coaches of Nick Nadd and the coaches of Sandy at the time, which makes sense. They were trying to protect the ruckman, but also, you know, it wasn't real good for the team who just won the flag.
I mean, well, the team that has benefited most from it, you've got to say statistically so far, is Sydney. So if you're going to point the finger at somebody, you've got to point the finger at Sydney. You've got to point the finger at John Longmire, because they've gone from being the second worst team in the competition to being the second best team in the competition.
Yeah, and Buddy's come back from the depths of injury and suddenly popped back up when it's easy to be a leading forward again.
Perfect. Had a couple of years off, had a baby, built a nice house.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, they changed the rules back so that I can be good again?
There we go.
All right, here I am.
Jeez, it was getting hard.
Hey, man, I'm Lance.
I'm still the best player in the league.
Yeah. Who are all these new kids? No, I don't know any of their names either, but they're all awesome, aren't they?
Yeah, Buddy's doing a lot of pass it here, mate.
Mate?
Yeah, a lot of mates out there.
What I was going to ask you is, do you feel, because I do feel now that we've seen how good it can be again and how it's brought back in the things about the game that we do love again, do you feel a bit ripped off? Do you think that if you're a player of this last 10 years where it was that rolling mall style football and it didn't suit, you know, the parts of the game that you, did you feel ripped off that you played, like, Would you have preferred to come along and play in this era now if this continues like it is?
Well, from an individual point of view, I think it would suit me more. Yeah. But from a team point of view, I would say that we would have been exposed more as the Bulldogs
right.
in 2016 with this because we had quite small defenders. So, you know, we always had issues.
Luckily, everything's changed.
Yeah. 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 Nothing's changed. Because we used to get, I mean, like Tomahawk used to dominate us. We used to have issues with Josh Kennedy all the time. These guys are going to be better, not worse, with these rule changes. I mean, Buddy was always tough to get a handle on, but we seem to do okay against him. Impossible now. Impossible to stop him with this amount of space he's going to be getting and the grounds being in such beautiful nick after last year.
Mm.
That's all right. So, Will, thank you very much for coming along. What is your Bulldog story? How did a boy from Sale, near Hayfield.
My
Anderson Road, I know that.
Telling people where I live is like a get smart routine. It's like, it starts real big and then constantly has to be minimized until we get to the real story. Grew up on Anderson's Road, Denison, named after my grandfather who built the road. Dad's lived on the road all his life. Denison's got about 250 people. It's a farming community. The nearest big town is a place called Hayfield. The Hayfield Kangaroos were the team that I played for when I grew up. And Hayfield's about 1,200. Sales, the nearest kind of what you call a big proper town, it's 12,000. So they were the Magpies, mm-hmm. Sale. And so
are they your rivals?
No, so we used to play in the North Gippsland League and they were in the Latrobe Valley League. So Sale played with like Traralgon and Mowi and like teams down, like, you know, it was the sort of the bigger league.
Yeah.
So I played in the North Gippsland League, which was like Maffra and like, you know, Rosedale and, you know, places like that. So grew up playing football there. Now, I have talked about this before. This isn't like a bombshell, but I don't talk about it that much.
You were good. You're allowed to say
No, I've talked about that. Oh, right.
But, I thought that's where it was going too.
Yeah, no, we'll get to that. I won't stop talking about how I was good for 5 minutes.
You told me a story like one of the first times we met about an opponent you had in juniors who you didn't think much of.
Do you think I've stopped telling that story? I literally told that story to someone 2 nights ago.
Well, I haven't heard it, so.
I'll tell that story now. We can go back to the Bulldogs thing. So when I was an okay junior footballer, mostly because the reason was I am the height that I am now, 6'2", 6'3", when I was 13. I was one of those kids who had that growth spurt. And so, like, I was taller than all the other kids. I was reasonably athletic, came from a sporting family, but, like, had a period of time from, like, 13 to 15 where I just, like, dominated junior football. Like, was 15 playing in the under-19s, came, like, third in the league best and fairest at, like, 15 in the under-19s in North Gippsland. Like, was really on my way to, like...
Did you win a flag with the Kangaroos?
Won a flag with the under-19s.
Perfect. We won a flag. Congrats.
I played like country, big, you know, junior footy, like under 15s, played with a whole bunch of people who went on to play AFL. So it was, you know, good times. Like, but unfortunately, everybody else then grew and got like fitter and more talented. And I stayed exactly the same and about the same amount of unco. And so then also, because I'd been that tall when I was 13 and never learned about posture and stuff, my back started to hurt a lot. So anyway, that was pretty much the end of my sporting career. But the last dregs of it, I moved to Canberra to go to university. And up there, David Cloak was coaching at Ainslie, was the name of the football club. And up there, I think if you played in the seniors in the local Canberra, you know, league up there, it was $500 a game. And so for a uni kid, in my head, I was like, oh, this would be great. I'm going to go up there. I'll get in the seniors there. $500 a week. This is my part-time job while I study. What a great life.
Perfect. Right?
So I go up there. I play my first game in the under-19s. And they tell us, whoever plays best, like it's a preseason match, whoever plays best in the under-19s today, we're going to give a run in the seniors. So I'm like, perfect. What a great way to establish yourself at a new club. You know, Cloakie's had a big talk to me about it, like about what we could do. I'm like, I'm from Victoria. Like, I've played like good junior footy. I'll show these.
Of course, these kids. New South Welsh. Yeah. Oh no,
Camp Barons.
In the NEFL, might I add, Ainslie. Yeah. Don't forget, they played. I used to play against them at the Giants.
Oh really?
Yeah, that was one of the.
But I was like, you know, I'm a big dog. I'm coming to town. I'm going to show these kids a thing or two. And remarkably, I consider this to be the last good game of football I ever really played. I played games after this, but this was literally the last time I could ever say, this day I played really, really well. Like, the ball just followed me like a magnet. It just went, yeah, just one of those days where it just bounced in your hands. If you kicked it over your head, it bounced through the goals. It was just one of those.
It was like Boydie's grand final.
Boydie's grand final, yeah. Exactly. I'm glad you got there, because I felt a bit mean to go there. That's but you're absolutely right. It was the perfect comedy call.
No arguments here.
By the way, Will and I sat right. I sat in front of you in the grand final. Correct. And when you got that goal from the pocket, Boydie, you leaned over to me and said, well, our $1 million guy has got 2 goals and their $1 million guy's on the bench.
Yeah, I was pretty lippy at those days.
Yeah, he busted his ankle. Oh, he's on the bench.
Well, we didn't know that.
Yeah,
I'd seen him at breakfast that morning. I was staying in the hotel in South Yarra, the same one as the Swans, and they were at the next table, and I was literally thinking, is it my duty as a Bulldogs fan
laxatives
to go over there and just like fall over his knee or something? Do you know what I mean? Like, just accidentally. Nice to see you, Mr. Oh,
no.
Sorry, man. Anyway, did my bit, guys. Hey, Bevo, forget about Bob. Call me up. I'm the one who won it.
So we will talk about the grand final.
I'm all over the place. But
that's great.
So I play this game. I play, like, honestly, you know, a pretty good game. So at the end of the game, when they're announcing who's going to play in the seniors, I'm pretty confident it's going to be me.
How many touches you reckon you got?
I mean, maybe not like 30, but certainly sort of maybe mid-20s.
Yeah, but red like a 30.
Yeah, red
goals, like a 30. Couple of goals,
I reckon. Oh,
it's a good day.
Plenty of touches. Kind of played like Ruck Rover. Yeah. I did kind of pinch hit in the ruck, but like
a young Bontempelli, if you will, 6'2" in the midfield.
Now we're overstating things. in no other way other than the 6'2". Yeah. Not real good on the left for a start. Anyway, they picked this other kid, and they picked this other kid instead, and he had had a pretty good game. But the reason that he got picked was clearly they knew who he was. He was a bit of a young star at the club.
He was no Ando.
He was getting, and I remember distinctly saying to people, there is no way that guy is a better footballer than I am. The name of that guy was, of course, James Hurd. And I remember when he won the Brownlow, I reckon I got more calls that night than Hurdy. Like, so many of my friends who'd heard me tell this story over and over over the years were like, yeah, no way, he's a better footballer than you are. And I remember doing a function for the Sydney Swans with my good mate Adam Spencer, who was their number one ticket holder, of course, in 2016, I'm pretty sure. And Spence and I, you know, obviously did a few functions together that year. We did AFL 360 the night before the grand final.
It was brilliant. Great episode.
And so we were at this Swans game. The Swans were playing the Bulldogs, and I was like the guest at the Swans lunch that he was hosting. And Gil's there in the front row. And so Adam gets me to tell, you know, that story. And so I tell that story. And
that's your sportsman's night, kid. That's
it is.
Good.
It basically is, right? It's my sportsman's night story. And then I say at the end, and I said, but you know what? If you had been picked between the two of us, which of us would have our career destroyed by drugs, you would have gone the other way. Honestly, Danny, and you'll know this, it's honestly my favourite laugh I've ever got in my entire life, because Gil, I'm looking straight at him, we're as far apart as you and I are right now, and Gil has a moment where he laughs like you just laughed, but then catches himself and realises, I cannot be seen laughing at this. And
you've
never seen, like, talk about project style change of paces. Yeah. Like, you've never seen a man going from laughing maniacally to completely straight face in one motion. It was incredible.
He had to pretend he was remembering a joke he saw on Seinfeld night before.
I was laughing at something else.
Yeah. Someone in the crowd.
Lou Richards' old bits. I just remember.
I do have an equivalent story, not in a footy career, but one of my first jobs in media was Fox FM. They got me on the breakfast show with Tracy and Matt for a little bit, and it went okay. But it took me a while to. It was a bit of a toxic environment. They got told on the Friday, there's a new guy joining you on Monday. So I go in, and I'm only 19, so they just hate me, just for who I am. Eventually, they move me on, and they say, well, you know, you can drive the Black Thunders if you want. We're going to bring in this other guy who we're told is pretty funny. And I go, who is he? I've never heard of him. He's never done stand-up. He's going to be a dud. His name's Hamish Blake.
He's done all right.
Nah, but you know, he hasn't driven a Black Thunder. He probably has. He's done everything.
Yeah, probably has, just for fun.
So
him,
what was
him and Andy probably drove Black Thunders for a year as one of the dares on the radio station or something.
Channel 10 made a show out of it. What was the other story you were telling us?
I was growing up in country Victoria.
Yep.
So,
how you became a Dogs fan.
Yeah, so this is the bit that I don't talk about very much, as opposed to the thing I just told you, which I'm happy to talk about at any start. I grew up in so my grandfather is a Collingwood supporter, mm-hmm. and it was required. We were from one of those families where it was meant to be required that everybody was a Collingwood supporter. But my father is the only of the five kids who does not barrack for Collingwood. He barracks for Geelong. Mm-hmm. And when I was young, our granddad at Christmas, like, he would get all the kids in a row at Christmas and give you $5, but he would only give you $5 if you told him you barrack for Collingwood. And of course, when you're a kid, you're like, well, I want to fit in with my cousins, and, like, you know, I'm the eldest in my family. No one's really picked yet. I guess I barrack for Collingwood, right? So there is a picture of me that still exists in a Collingwood football jumper as a kid.
When my family first came to Australia, we got hand-me-down jumpers from the local church, and I wore a Collingwood jumper to school once, and kids went, oh, that's our team. And I'm like, cool. I went for Collingwood for 2 years.
It's a bit of a surplus of Collingwood jumpers at the church. Yeah. Yeah. It was. The whole school had them.
It was just dark times.
We had to sell it when Dad went to prison. And look. So there is a photo that exists that my brother always, like, loves to send to me of me in a Collingwood football jumper. But when I was old enough to understand that you were allowed to pick your own team, I was told the story of Dad picking his own team. And Dad sort of explained that he thought that all of us should get to pick our own team. So everyone in my family has a different team. My sister barracks for St Kilda, my brother barracks for Essendon, and I barrack for the Bulldogs. And I chose the Bulldogs because, well, it was a combination of things. I had a really good mate called Jason McCainch, who barracked for the Bulldogs, and we just used to listen to the games, you know, at halftime at the footy and, you know, junior footy and stuff. But also Brad Hardy came to our school to do a
nice,
like, you know, one of those school visits that they have to do.
It's a fair hike from Footscray to...
Well, East Gippsland was a Bulldog zone.
Yeah,
so back in the days when there used to be zones. So when I played junior footy, like when I played schoolboys footy and stuff, we used to play in the Bulldogs colours.
Right.
So we were from essentially the Bulldog zone. So we got the Bulldogs players down and to our school.
Bairnsdale's in that area.
Yeah.
Hence we got...
And what I always...
There's someone famous from Bairnsdale. I always say Chris Grant, but he's Dalesford, isn't he?
No, Dalesford, yeah.
Clay's from Bairnsdale.
There we go.
Clay and Kobe. Kobe was down there too.
There we go. Stevens.
Of course, the sale most famous for Scott Pendlebury is the most famous sale export.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. There was a whole bunch of players from Hayfield. Hayfield was a town of 1,200 people, and at one stage had five AFL players playing on AFL lists, which was pretty incredible for a tiny little town like that.
Yeah, for sure.
My school just had Andrew Lovett. I played footy with him, and I remember our coach was Chris Johnson, the Brisbane Lions player. When he was playing for Fitzroy, he coached our school. And I remember at one quarter time, he just sort of went, all right, boys, yeah, you're going all right. And he just pointed to Lovett. He goes, Andrew, can you do that thing where you get the ball and no one tackles you and you kick all the goals? Lovett just went, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, do it four or five times. Okay, we won.
Well, Brad came to our school, and the joke I always used to make was, like, as someone who was a bit of a, you know, tubby blood nut myself, I was, you know, immediately fell in love with the idea that you could be a tubby blood nut and, you know, play AFL grade, VFL at the time, football. And so I followed Brad's career quite closely. He was probably my first real absolute sort of, like, I love, you know, when he won the Brownlow, that was the first real success that I remember experiencing as a Bulldog supporter.
Yeah.
I remember when he won the Brownlow, that felt like a really big deal to me as a kid. And so from that moment on, and so I remember making that joke at some stage, and Brad's wife might have got in time. Anyway, Brad and I are quite good friends now.
Oh, like, sweet.
In fact, on grand final day in 2016, we you know, saw each other that night and, yeah, got to catch up. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't have been into any of this if it weren't for... for you coming to my school, so, you know. It was
have you
nice
sent him abuse
see.
On, like, other preliminary final nights, like 2009? This is all your fault, Hardy!
I was just about to say, that's such a nice moment, and then you're like, oh, we've been abusing him for 10 years before.
I was going to say, if the abuse is coming, it often comes the other way. You know, he's forthright about his opinions.
That's
about
true, yeah.
Most things. It's not what I say is, like, a reserved person, Mr. Hardy, but, yeah, it's been actually one of the great pleasures of my adult life to, you know, consider the fact that he is my friend now.
And when did you become – you're an official ambassador for the Bulldogs.
I am, I guess. I don't know. That it's not like they reappoint you every year or something. I think once you're an ambassador, you're an ambassador for until you disgrace yourself.
So how long to go?
Yeah, I was going to say, who knows? But with me, it's a real lottery day to day. I assume I'm still an ambassador. They're still returning my calls.
So. That's all right. So, but when would they first get in contact with you? At what stage of your career did you become the...
I remember talking to actually... around, so the era that obviously, you know, that I was most connected with was, you know, Darcen, Brownie and Bob and all those guys. And they were guys that I knew, you know, like I was living here in Melbourne. We'd go to parties together, you know, we'd hang out. Like we were all similar age, you know, or similar-ish age, you know. And so that was kind of the generation where I would just be talking about the club a lot. And that wasn't a really great era for a while for the Bulldogs, particularly in the media. Like apart from Ernie Sigley, there wasn't many other people flying the media flag for the Bulldogs. Yeah. And I'm on Triple J and I can't stop talking about like the Bulldogs. And so the club actually said to me a few years ago that they were quite grateful that through a bunch of very lean years where nobody was really telling the story of the Bulldogs, that I at least was... advocating on behalf of the Bulldogs. But, you know, as soon as Julia Gillard and the Hemsworths came along, they were happy to elbow me down the line a little.
They're still chasing Chris to return their calls, I think. I don't think he responds all the time either.
Yeah. It's like every time they call me, I'm like, so who didn't get back to you? Okay. Chris, Julia and Shane all said no. So what's...
I respect that Julia's sort of like whenever she'd go into the circle and she wouldn't sing the song. It's like, are you an actual fan? And then now that she's not Prime Minister anymore, she doesn't really pretend to be. I kind of respect that.
Yeah.
I mean, I spoke to the former Prime Minister on my podcast, Philosophy, and which was almost the most embarrassing moment of my entire life. I'll tell you a quick story. So I'm 47 years old, so I'm at the point where I can use emojis, but I'm not... across most of them. I've got a select version of emojis that I roll with.
I've got foreboding dread.
No. So, well, it's not bad in the way you're imagining it's going to be bad.
I feel better now.
It's definitely bad.
There's no eggplant coming up, is there?
No. Okay. So I'm across eggplant. I'm not going to send a water drop to someone in case that's misinterpreted. Like I very much stick to thumbs up. Okay, although even okay is a bit dodgy now because I think that's a white power symbol or something. So you've got to keep across things. So you're not.
We got the fingers crossed from you, I think, didn't we? In our
fingers
little
crossed? Yeah. Still rolling with fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's safe for now.
I'm still on yellow generic setting. I feel like that's the safe area.
Simpsons, nice. Yeah.
Neutral. Just neutral.
Just feel like. And so instead of sending thumbs up all the time, occasionally when Charlie, who I do my podcast TOEFOP with, and we'd be in our WhatsApp or organising things, can we do 130? I would send back the little guy with sunglasses, which as far as I was aware was cool.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
That's cool. What I would take as.
Yep. Okay, good. Yeah, that's what most people seem to think. I sent it for about 3 weeks before Charlie eventually went, hey, man, I just don't know what that means. And I was like... Could you have not worked it out?
Like, yeah, he looks like, cool. He's wearing sunglasses.
And he goes, it actually reminded me of that photo of Tony Abbott when he was wearing Speed Dealer sunglasses. And then I was like, what are you talking about? And then we Googled this photo and it really does look like Tony Abbott wearing he's got these Speed Dealer sunglasses. And so then anyway, I have ended up, I'm actually going to show you guys. This will be terrible for your listeners, but
it's all right. Can we put this on our socials?
You can put this on your socials. It is absolutely fine. And so what I ended up doing was finding that photo, and then in the crappiest lettering you could possibly have, that you just draw on with your finger, I have written the word "cool" on top of it, right? And so then every time that we were arranging a meeting or whatever, instead of sending this is. The photo that I'm talking
about. Oh, yeah, that's
right?
Good, isn't it?
So,
so fluoro speed dealers.
Fluoro speed dealer sunglasses.
And the suit, though. I like
that. The word cool just scrawled on the top of it.
He looks like he's going to court.
So this became our running joke. And so then when we started doing the show over Zoom, I set that as my background.
Oh, no.
So that... it would be funny. So then I get Julia Gillard on the show. So I know that I've seen ahead. It's okay. I'm not going to just blindly walk into this.
Yeah.
I'm clearly going to go in. I'm going to reset the background and everything is going to be absolutely fine. So my producer Mike's on the call. We're waiting for Julia to join the call. He says, have you taken down the background? I go, can you see the background? He's like, no, the background's fine. Everything's fine. And then for whatever reason of technology, when her phone, when her one connects, my one decides to reset to the original. No. So literally, as she's coming on, I am sitting in front of a giant Tony Abbott in speed sunglasses with cool reset. And I start diving towards my computer like somebody's been caught alone in their office watching something they shouldn't be watching because I just had to. So
did she react?
No, I reckon she didn't see it. I think like she was just logging on and I managed to like get it out of the way just in time. If she did see it, she did not comment on it. But we spoke about the Bulldogs at the start of the interview.
I did, like, I heard
before
it.
We start, before we started as well, we had a chat about the Bulldogs. So I think she still is interested.
Oh, that's good. We should get her on this pod. You got it. Yeah. You know her through Beyond Blue, don't you?
No, I don't know Julia. I mean, I think I've met her once, maybe.
Is Beyond Blue like, you're with Headspace?
I'm not with any.
Oh, okay. There's not like a rivalry between all of the mental health?
They all
health.
Do different stuff. I mean, Headspace is a bit confusing because they run the app and there's the American company and the Australian version of it, which is sort of like the help centers. And yeah, it's all complex, the mental health space.
Well, that's what it needs, unnecessary complexity.
You're
that's
telling
what
me.
That's what I find that people who want help with their mental health need.
That's right. Yeah, there's a bureaucracy. Few good things. There's obviously a lot of good people and good things going on, but the complexities.
If you can find them.
That's right. Well, you can find them, but you've got to find the right ones, which is the hard bit. And then you've got to work out how to pay for it. So there's many complexities to the industry that I do my work in.
Thankfully, for the moment, the Dogs are 3-0 and on top of the ladder. So my mental health is actually really strong at the moment. Mm.
What you've got to get is someone from the AFL to come in and sort out the mental health system. You know, what you need is some sort of stand on the mark.
Whoever
rule.
Did that.
Really, whoever did that.
Opens up the field.
Can you come in and just change one thing about this that'll revolutionise this as well?
That's right. That's right. That's what we need. But yeah, you're right. We've come off one of the biggest win in history, I believe, in the last few days.
It's pretty sweet. I reckon we should talk about the 2016 grand final because we got opened up to our listeners for listener mail. There's a few questions for you. And I know that just due to your natural style, we will go down many rabbit holes and stuff. I firstly want to apologize to you in the 2016 grand final. I don't know what your side of the story was, but I remember, I think it was about the time Toby McLean got the mark, and as we famously said to Toby, just before he ruined history by missing, you leaned over to me and you said, "We've got this." And I turned around and screamed in your face, "Shut the up! You shut the f- up!" And I'm sorry for doing that. I didn't realize that you'd got a message saying that the time was up or whatever.
I don't care. It's fine. You could have said, that's the best day of my life. I can't remember any of the bad stuff that happened that day.
I've got footage of the final siren with you hugging. Yeah. And actually, Charlie Clawson was filming you as well.
It was one of the great things about going. So Charlie, my friend who barracks for St Kilda, we have our own football podcast. And the reason we started it in 2016, and it's called Two Guys, One Cup, which please don't Google that, kids, by the way. But and the reason it was called Two Guys, One Cup is that he barracks for St Kilda, I barrack for the Bulldogs, and between us, our teams only had one premiership, and that was what had always bonded us, and we would have these conversations about, because he'd obviously seen his team playing grand finals, I'd been there with him when his team played grand finals.
Yeah, I'd sat with him in the 2010 draw.
And I had been through all that with him, and the argument was always like, well, is it better to see your team lose a grand final, or to be like what I had been, which is never even see your team play in a grand final, and obviously, I still haven't seen my team lose a grand final, but so we started then, and then of course 2016 happened, and you know, kind of ruined the whole conceit of what it is that we were doing on the show. But that day, having him there as part of it was great because I don't know what it was like for you, but it was an out of body experience for me.
Totally.
I can't remember breathing for the entire game.
No.
I everything's a blur. Like, I only really remember a lot of the game because I've watched the game back.
Yeah, I don't remember Boydie's goal at the end, like your famous goal. I don't remember it either.
It's really hard to discern little bits and pieces from that day. It's really confusing. I have these weird flashbacks of like moments in the rooms at halftime, you know, like getting my shoulder restrapped, like little bits and pieces. But for the most part, it's just you're so overwhelmed and caught up in the just ridiculous amount of emotion in the place. And the great cathedral of football, which is the MCG, just sort of makes it pretty hard to remember little bits and pieces, I think.
One thing I do remember involving you, Boydie, was your goal, Will's comment, which was great. But then at one stage, you ran off the bench and took a mark. I didn't see you run off the bench, but one guy just went, "Boydie's running from the bench!" and you came in, took the grab. It was that was a brilliant moment.
Oh, that must have been the halfback line. That was yeah, it was a good, it was probably in the third quarter, I think.
Yeah.
No, that was it was a wonderful day, and I mean, like, the emotion that you're talking about is pretty much universally shared, even amongst people who aren't fans of the team. You know, specifically, it was just such a weird time where the whole of Victoria and even everyone just didn't want Sydney to win another flag after they'd sort of had a pretty successful run.
But even the funny thing is that I know from Sydney Swans fans, there was a great deal of, like, even for them who had been so disappointed on the day, what I found was, because they had been through something similar going a long time and then finally winning a premiership.
Yeah.
I got the sense from Sydney fans that they were also happy for the Bulldogs.
They were gracious.
You know, at the time. I think since then they've got a little bit more bitter about it.
The umpiring comes up a bit.
Fair enough. That's football and I totally understand that. But on the day, I do remember a lot of Swans fans going, well, I'm excited that you get to experience what we got to experience, because that first time, I mean, I think it, you, so you sometimes think, what would it like to be a Hawthorn supporter or whatever? But there was something very special about what we went through. Was I went through half of my life supporting something in the hope that this would one day happen.
Yes, not like, knowing if it ever would.
You're never going to get that build up again. I can't imagine that I will ever feel about, like, I mean, if we win the premiership this year, it would be super exciting to me.
Oh, yeah.
But it could never be as exciting as that long wait thinking, maybe this is never, particularly with what we came off. Like, I mean, Tom's story being obviously so involved in this, because we were at that rock bottom, you know, we've lost our captain, we've lost our CEO, the coach is gone, you know, like, Peter Gordon comes in, makes this big move, like, you know, in this moment to try to, like, get some confidence and some swing back to the club. And then, like, a couple of years later, we're winning a premiership. Like, that story itself, like, as a supporter, there was a time 2 years ago where I was just like, well, what have I done? I've just literally wasted so much of my life putting my energy and emotion and letting how this team goes define how
mood,
happy or otherwise, that I am in the rest of my life.
The emotional gambling of football.
And then to just have it rewarded in such a, like, there's nothing about that day. I mean, there's so much about that day that I can't remember, that goes past in a blur. Like, I remember being invited down to the rooms afterwards and just thinking, this is not for me. I'm a fan. Like, this is, the fans shouldn't be there. It's about the players. And yet, like, in retrospect, kind of going, no, maybe I, like, wish I had. I went to the ball afterwards, which was amazing.
Where I remember seeing you there,
Where I remember hugging Easton Wood, and I had forgot that I had a glass of champagne in each hand. And I... So as I've hugged him, I've smashed the glasses and poured champagne, like, right down his back.
Yes.
So, like, he's having the best day of his life until I wander off.
It was part of the memory, the champagne stain on the jumper.
On the back, down his back. And I'm just, it comes up every time I see him. Every time I see him.
And what did you do immediately after, though? If you didn't go down to the rooms, which pub nearby did you go to? Or did you go to back to your hotel room? Or
I honestly cannot remember.
Awesome.
I can't remember anything between the end of the game and being at the function. I couldn't for $1 million tell you right now where I went in between.
Well, yeah, if anyone knows, there's a few hours in that period of time.
Because
you know, we wander around the ground underneath for a couple of hours, and then we go back up onto the ground when it's dark and there's no one there, sing the song in the middle of the ground, and then we sort of meander down to the function. And so you've gone missing for 4 hours by the sounds of it.
What's the writing instructions that night? Because one of the things that I have said since, and this sounds like such an old man thing to say, but one of the things that, like, I loved the most about the entire experience was how proud I felt of everybody, because everyone behaved really well. Like, I know that sounds like such an old man thing to say, but I remember going to the function. I remember seeing you guys the next day at the Witten Oval, and everyone, you know, sometimes you see those, like, vision of, like, NRL players and they can't speak at the thing the next day, and they're, like, drinking beer up on stage, and they're just, like, clearly, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all for people celebrating hard for something they've worked so hard to achieve. But the fact that in the public aspects of it, you all presented really, really well, actually made me feel very proud of the group and how it was all conducted. What was the, was that like a, like a head decision? Who made that decision? What? How did that come about?
Oh, I think it's a bit unspoken. I mean, like, first and foremost, there's like a practical limitation, which is the fact that you've kind of got a lot of, you know, things and obligations you need to fulfill after the game. And that includes the obviously long-winded function, which goes for a couple of hours. And then...
You're talking about Peter Gordon's speech.
Well, we've already mentioned that once on the show.
It's okay. We can mention that a lot because it's
still going.
Well, I had been tapped. Like Nick Trullison had said to me, he said, like, after Pete finishes, if you can go up maybe and just, you know, say a few funny words or whatever.
Yeah. Nick Trullison's the commercial officer of the Bulldogs.
Yep. Right.
And the marketing guy.
Yeah, the marketing guy.
Good bloke. And he said, wonderful,
you know,
fella,
it'd be really fun maybe just to, you know, like, give the crowd a laugh or whatever at the end of Pete's speech. And then about an hour and a half into his speech, Nick's like, we won't need you.
Yeah. Your slot's been filled.
Yeah, exactly. No, the Bulldogs are hoping to win this year so Pete can finish his speech.
A lot of pressure on the new president.
Yeah.
She's going to have to, like, filibuster. Just read Lord of the Rings. All right, let's go to listener mail. All right, what do we got? First listener mail is actually for you, Tom Boyd.
Right.
From my mate Shane. He wants to know, when you were playing in the forward line, who was your favourite person to kick the ball to you? If someone was delivering the ball inside 50, who were you most happy it was because they were going to hit your chest?
Never the people you think. Like, guys like Bonds and stuff who kick the ball so hard. It's a bit of a pressure act trying to catch those things. I mean, my favourite thing is that everyone always tells me I started really nervously in the grand final. Bonty kicked the first kick to me about half a foot off the ground. It was the biggest mongrel, but on TV it looked like a perfect job punt. They're like, oh, he was jittery. And me and Nick Vlost, my old housemate, always had the same thing because he had a slip in the first the start of his grand final in 2017. And he said to me, he's just like, right, the ground was wet and it was slippery and I fell over and everyone thinks I was nervous. So to answer the question, I mean, look, guys like Mitch Honeychurch at the time, he sort of kicked the ball and sort of lobbed it up a bit more. Mitch Wallace is one of them. He probably does it pretty well. But yeah, like I don't think I spent enough time down there realistically to have a super big relationship with someone. But yeah, guys that kick it a bit easier is usually what I like.
Where is Mitch Honeychurch now?
He's playing at Vermont, I think. Yeah, he played in the AFL last year. It was funny.
He was so good. There was a game against Port in 2016 where we won by 3 points. Right? He pretty much won us the game.
Yeah, no, he's a wonderful fella. I think he got caught up in being a little short, not being able to kick quite far enough, not being quite quick enough. He's sort of just on the borderline of all the athletic markers that really make key players in the AFL.
Well, I heard Josh Bruce being interviewed this week and he was saying that I think Paddy Lipinski is his favourite for the similar reason.
That's a good, yeah. That's
like
a good,
for that reason that, like, puts it up a bit softer in front of you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like some of those, like, turns out that Bond and McRae and those guys are just jagging it at you a bit low and hard.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's one of the most, like, the biggest misnomers of football is that you don't want someone to kick you the ball perfectly. You want to kick it where no one else can catch it, right? Like, and it's and for a big guy, I want it, like, high. Don't give me a bullet. I've got longer arms than everyone. I can jump higher. Just kick it up there, you know? And I think Brucey got on the end of a few of them on the weekend, which was nice to see.
Yeah, that was good. Will, who is your all-time favourite doggy player? That's from Hayden.
Oh, all-time favourite.
I'm happy for you to do a top six if you want.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard choice, isn't it? Like, yeah. I mean, Bob was my favourite player, but we were friends. But I did love the way that he played football, you know. And before that, it was Brad Hardy. Definitely Doug Hawkins was a favourite without a doubt. I mean, it's hard to go past, like, Marcus at the moment, though. Like, he's a boy, you know, compared to me. Like, he literally is, like, old enough that he could be my son. And... Yeah, he feels like so much. Like,
you played the field a lot, Will. You could be. You might have a few kids in the
Mrs.
AFL.
Montebelli, and she's a lovely.
I don't mean Bont. I mean, and obviously, ones who aren't as good as James Hurd.
I said to Mrs. Montebelli, I remember this. It was the first season, I reckon, he was playing too. And I remember I was down in the rooms and I was standing next to her. And I just said, thank you. And she said, I get that a lot.
I can't imagine it's let up in the last 5 years since you said that to her.
So, I think probably if I was going to say the period of time when you're probably the most into he's my favourite player is probably, like, let's say age 15 to early 20s, and then you sort of become an adult, you get beyond sort of, like, you know, favourite players in that sort of.
Yeah.
So for me, Chris Grant. Of that time, Chris Grant was by far and away the best player at the Bulldogs, and you know, should have won two Brownlows. This is what people forget about Chris Grant. Grant actually won one, of course. Like, yes, people forget that Chris Grant won from Brownlow.
Yes.
And got suspended for 1 week for a thing that would not even be a fine these days.
No, he just sort of fell from a marking contest with an open hand and accidentally grazed someone's cheek.
So he won one and should have won the other one, which was, I think, the McCurry kicked the goal after the siren in the final game.
96,
and
yes.
James Hird ended up getting the 3 votes and Chris Grant ended up getting the 2 votes. And if he hadn't kicked that goal, it would have been Grant 3, Hird 2, and he would have won his second Brownlow. He could play centre forward and centre half back. If I'm talking about who was I a fan of. Remember that story about when he was going to go to Port Adelaide?
Oh, yes.
The little kid sent him 50 cents in the mail with the letter about how important it was. Yeah, anyway. Peter Gorin writing with his left hand.
Actually, when I was working at Fox FM doing the Black Thunders, I was once at High Point and Chris Grant was there and I stopped handing out Cokes to people and ran over and went, thanks for not going to Port, ran back. And this is like 2005.
You know what my favourite thing is? He is such a big star in my life for so many reasons that, and what a beautiful man as well. Genuinely quality human being. Like, his daughter's playing for the Bulldogs now. That video that went around of when she told him that she was like playing for the Bulldogs. I'm watching this and crying.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so invested in Chris Grant's career. And to the point where, because Daylesford obviously has become this very hip, you know, place these days for alternative lifestyles and holidays. And, you know, it's very hip. But anytime it comes up, I'm like, you know who's from... Every time. We're going to Daylesford. You know who's from Daylesford?
That video was great of Izzy telling Chris Grant, but I was mostly distracted. It seemed to be the Sydney to Hobart race and he's happening in the window. Where does he live?
Oh, I don't know.
Were we being invaded? One other thing. This is not listener mail, but I meant to bring it up. I'd forgotten to. Tom Liberatore. By the way, we haven't spoken about the Eagles game, but oh my God.
Yeah.
Tom Liberatore is ranked second in the competition for generating scores.
Mm.
And that, usually that's a ruckman's thing, like Nick Nat's number one just for the tap outs. He is our most important player.
Yeah, it has been for a long time, I would say. You know,
he's
both from just from an emotional standpoint, and also, you know, quite clearly a ridiculously skilled footballer and can do things around the contest that no one else could do. I mean, even Bont would struggle to give some of the handballs that he does and create such an energy for us.
And it was pointed out a fair bit that when Brucey got the 10 and everyone's running towards him, Libba was fighting the kangaroos at the bottom of back.
So I was watching the game and I was sitting there going, I would be so tired by this stage of the game. And the game's over and Bailey Smith and Libba are starting a brawl in the forward pocket whilst Brucey's kicked his 10th and we're up by 20 goals.
Well, I like to think everyone was celebrating in their own ways.
One for Bailey and Libba too. They used to like fighting probably
what
more than
celebrating. What do you want to do for fun? Let's go and kick these guys.
Let's go rip my jumper and wrestle.
Exactly. Chris wants to know, we reversed the curse of 61.
Yes.
How is that storyline going? Was that just a one-off or are we going to now win it in other reverse Hawthorne years? In 12?
We don't have many other curses to reverse. That's the sad thing about the history of our club, really, isn't it?
That, like, 2079, we're going to finally beat Adelaide.
Because that was my theme of 2016. So I announced at the start of 2016. Again, it's great to claim these things as if you had some special insight, but I didn't. I've said heaps of ridiculous things. Yeah. And if you say enough ridiculous things, occasionally one of those ridiculous things comes through.
Yeah. Law of averages.
People think you're a genius. So at the start of 16, the very first round, I was doing a lunch for the Bulldogs. Luke Darcy was hosting and I made the call at the opening lunch. 2016 we were going to win the premiership because we were going to reverse the curse of 1961 and this was going to be our year. And I just said, this is what's going to happen this year. And of course that is, I mean, we beat Hawthorne in a semi-final, but still, for the sake, I predicted we'd play Hawthorne in the grand final, we'd beat them in the grand final. So it was close.
Yeah.
Close enough that people remember that I said reverse the curse. But I have no more of those up my sleeve. That was the only real curse I can think of.
Well, Hawthorne hasn't won a final since.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe we did reverse the curse. Hang on, maybe
I'm proud of this, mate.
I got to be honest with you. Now that you say it back to me. Anyway, I did suggest this new rule to the AFL this year.
Where you live in Byron Bay or near there now?
I don't know where I live.
Okay,
I'm an international man of mystery, but
fair enough.
Yeah, no, I do. I do. Well, not international.
Yeah,
domestic man of mystery. Yeah, man
they've
mystery.
Gone the way of the dodo, those international yeah, man knows. Of the mysteries.
Yes, no, I've been living up on the northern rivers of New South Wales, yes.
How is it? Is it hard?
How is it being the second most famous Bulldog supporter even in that yeah. area? Yeah,
you're
right.
You really chose a place where the only most famous one is up yeah. there.
That's all right. Bob Murphy lives around the corner from me. I'm not even the most famous Bulldog supporter at my kid's school.
That's a good point, actually.
But is it, Marcus wanted to know, Marcus Johnson, not Bond, wanted to know, is it hard watching games from New South Wales now that there's crowds in Melbourne?
You know what? I don't get to the footy as much as I would like for a whole bunch of different reasons. But I've got to also say, I love watching the footy on telly. Like, I'm not one of those people that, you know, I love going to games when I get the opportunity, but it's not like I feel like watching it at home on my couch is an inferior experience. It's just a different experience. And I love watching the Bulldogs, in fact, are the team that I find hardest to watch. Like, the West Coast game is a good example. Like, I had done very well. Like, I watched the first three quarters of that West Coast game live, and I rarely watch Bulldogs games live because I get too nervous during the game. And I think that's what I sometimes don't like about being there live. You have to watch it live if you're there live.
You're so trapped.
Yeah. If you're at home, you can do what I did in the West Coast game, which is like, well, I'm not going to watch the last quarter. I'm going to go and clean the pool, and I'm going to let the last quarter happen, and then I'm going to see if it's okay for me to watch last quarter.
Then it's not your fault if you do anything superstitious.
Well, that's literally what I was like. I was like, well, I'm the problem. Me watching this is the problem. I've got to step away from this for a minute. So,
well, thank you. We did fire up.
Yeah. And now, that's only reinforced the fact that I thought I was the problem.
So you're never going to watch another game again.
I love that the crowds are back, is what I would say. Yeah. I absolutely love that the crowds are back at the football because, much like what we do for a living, you know, the football can continue. Our job doesn't. Our job's just a person talking.
Yeah.
without an audience agreeing that it's a job.
You're the guy yelling on the street.
You
corner.
Are just the guy yelling on the street. So, but football, they can play regardless. But I think now that you've seen the crowds back there, we understand how much. Because when we talk about how much better the game is this year, I think that part of it is the new rule. I think part of it is the interchanges, without a doubt. And I think that part of it is that you just had all these players play for a year without crowds there.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're back in front of crowds. No wonder Liam Ryan wants to – I mean, I know he always wants to jump on people's heads, but what is more satisfying? Like, in an empty stadium going for a big specky, or in like a crowded stadium in Perth in front of your home ground, like hanging on someone's head for 4.5 minutes to mark it? Like, of course you're going to do that. Like, I think that having the crowds there, and probably the players are appreciating the fact that they're back in front of crowds, which means they want to do more exciting things.
Yeah, and furthermore, I mean, the fact that they're getting rejuvenated by actually going home and, you know, being able to see their family and friends like we all had struggles with last year. I mean, the players look like they've got more energy than they did at the end of last year. It was a limping home fest by the end of the year for many teams, right?
Right. And people, I think we will all reflect at some stage on how hard, you know, this time has been for people. We all went through it in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of it. Like, a lot of people had it much harder than, but everybody went through it.
Yeah.
Whether you were not working or whether you were working, you were both doing it in an unusual circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare that one group of people goes to work almost more than they ever have. Like, if you're talking about emergency service workers, frontline workers, they just went through a year where they've worked harder and in more intense situations than they ever have in their life. And I consider sports people to be part of that because a lot of them made huge sacrifices to go away and live away from home, live away from their family, sacrifice a whole bunch of things in their life to entertain people, right? We've got to reflect at some stage that was a big deal as much as the people who had to stay home and weren't able to do anything.
Yeah. Yep.
They're different, but they're both big deals.
Yeah, yeah. One final question for you, Will, is would you rather fight 100 duck-sized Will Minsons or one Will Minson-sized duck? That's from Andy.
So hang on, it's 100 duck-sized Will Minsons.
Yep, or one.
Or one Will Minson-sized duck.
Yeah.
Is the Will Minson, like, Will Minson's fighting ability? Because in my mind, that would make a difference.
I don't think it's just size. It's all we've got here. I don't think.
Okay.
Will can't box. By
so the 100, the 100 duck sized Will Minsons aren't all playing clarinet, are they?
No, or speaking Latin.
Or flying planes. Because that would be unfair.
I'm going to say one Will Minson-sized duck?
Yeah, although it's a good question. There's only one answer. You're going to fighting 100 Will Minsons is going to be impossible.
I don't have anything against Will Minson. Apart from
it's for charity. It's a boxing thing.
Oh, for charity.
Yeah, you don't have to fight to the death.
Sorry, okay. Well, in that case, 100 Will Minsons.
And Boydie, who would you rather fight? The Will Minson-sized duck?
Oh, just to see miniature Will Minsons running around. Yeah, I think exactly. You'd have to go with it just for the interesting factor.
Never got his own NAB series, Will Minson, unfortunately. So yeah. Never got a mini legend. I would have liked to see a mini Will, clarinet under one arm, in a plane.
I want to see the mini Will Minson-sized duck. It's just a duck with a bulldog's jumper, but that's entertaining. Actually, there is one last question, okay. Will. I forgot to add it in this week, but was Boydie screwed not to get the Norm Smith? It's in every week.
I have said this before, so it's not me sucking up for the sake of the podcast. I think that you are the most important player in the game. So if the award is for the most important player in the game, then you probably should have won it. Now let's go back through a few years where I should have won the Barry at the Melbourne.
So 2021, yeah. I think, is the year.
I was going to say, who should I'll go back and point out the shows that I should have beaten.
Well, yeah, but let's do your plugs. Where you're doing Will Eagle at Arts Theatre.
Will Eagle at the Arts Centre, yes. So at the Playhouse at the Arts Centre. That is my show that I did in 2018.
I'm very excited.
Probably my best ever show, which unfortunately ran into Nanette in the finals of the Barry that year. So anyway, turns out, better team on the day, you know? You love it.
You're like the New York Knicks. Fixturing issue.
Had a great series, but sometimes you just run into unstoppable force.
You're more like the LA Lakers. You finally beat the Boston Celtics, and then the Detroit Pistons show up, and then Michael Jordan shows up.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. I'm doing Illegal, return season of that at the Art Centre, and I would love people to come out and see that. But I'm also on the final Saturday night of the festival at 10:30 at night at the Comedy Theatre, doing a one-off performance of my improvised stand-up show. What you talking about, Will? So there was a whole bunch of people who, obviously, because We're Legal is a return season. It was funny. I did the first night last night when we're speaking, and it was great. But it's in a theatre, which is a bit of a different experience to doing it in a more rock and roll-y style venue. Yeah. And you know, first night out, it's not completely full. I mean, it was sold out, but it's not completely full because of the COVID seating. Yes. So it's just a different vibe, getting used to it. Some people are coming out for the first time, and afterwards, I was like, that was good, but it wasn't quite as great as I thought it was going to be. And my manager said, you've already done this show in Melbourne. 15,000 people saw it. Technically, these people in the room were not people who were keen enough to see it in the first 15,000 people who saw it. So don't imagine they're going to be the people who are really desperate. And I was like, that is a reasonable point that you are making, sir.
Yeah.
But no, it's a really fun show, and I would love to people to come out. But the improvised show is on because a lot of people said, well, we love to come out and see a show every year, and we'd love to see something new. So the final Saturday night, 10:30 at the Comedy Theatre.
I've seen you do What You're Talking About, Will, at the Comedy Store, and it's just Will doing crowd work, Tom. And it's like you're a very, very good writer and a very, very good performer, but your crowd work is something to behold.
Yeah, it is the most fun.
Yes, and that's what I see. I see you, the lights in your eyes. It's like it's as close as you get to, I guess, you being in the midfield. Just where's the ball going? Okay, I'm going
to
grab it now.
That's what it feels like. I spoke to Steve Waugh once about. I said to him, I said, when the West Indies are bowling to you that quickly, how do you have time to decide what shot you're going to play? And he said, well, you don't. He said, you've got to do all the work up until that point and then hope in that moment that your instincts, in fact, in some ways, you've got to get out of your way, right? You've got to get into that zone. And you just see it sometimes with sports people where they're not thinking about what to do. They're not they are just in it. They are just going where the ball goes. They're using their skills. They're trusting that in the moment they'll, know by reflex because they've worked hard enough up until that point. That's what those improv shows are like at their best.
Yeah.
When I am flying, it feels like it's that day in Canberra where it all went well for the very last time. And occasionally the ball bounces in the opposite direction and then I have to dig my way out of that hole, and that's fun too.
Well, it is brilliant. Are you doing anywhere else that we should plug this Bulldogs?
There will be other places in Australia this year, but because of the nature of how we're still, operating, some of them just pop up. I mean, I went to Adelaide. I wasn't going to Adelaide one week and I was in Adelaide doing shows the next week because Tom Bellard got stuck in New Zealand. Brilliant. You know, it's one of those years this year where there will definitely be shows all over the country, but It's hard to tell you exactly when or where they are going to be yet.
Saturday, May 1st, Enmore Theatre. You can see me doing my show up and about for all the New South Wales Dogs fans. Brilliant. Please come along. Boy, do you have any gigs coming up that you want to plug?
No plugs for me, man. I'm just here for the times.
Come to when's St. Kevin's first game?
This week, Collegians Saturday.
Can people go?
I'm sure they can, Don't ask me too much about the amateurs. I've only just joined, so I don't really know what's going on. Mum goes, "Who are the Collegians?" I said, No idea.
Do you know the song? St. Kevin's yet?
A song?
Yeah.
No.
Do you know what their song is based on? Do you even know, like, if it's based on, because chances are it's like the club song of another.
Surely
club,
I win the Saints.
No, I actually think it's from the school. I think it's like an old sort of.
Like a chant. Or a shanty or something like that.
I don't know. It's probably something out of Harry Potter or something.
What are they? So hang on. What is their name of their...
Yeah, what's your nickname?
What's the nickname of the team?
Scob.
Scob.
St. Kevin's All Boys.
Scob.
Scob.
Scob. I don't know. We got the girls are the Saints.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think we have a mascot.
Really?
Yeah. I may be missing something.
I was going to say. It doesn't feel like you're right across.
I don't think we do.
No, it's only scob and roll, but I like it.
it feels like something your doctor had diagnosed you with. Sorry, mate, you've got scalp. How long is it since you've changed these pants? You've got a nasty case of scalp. I mean, I can give you a cream, but it's not going to clean it up completely.
I'll find out after this from a bit of feedback from a few of the.
Oh yes,
if we do have a mascot, I'm probably finding out the next day.
I'd like
day
to know. Thank you.
And if they don't, can we just make them the Bulldogs? Then we
get
everyone
behind it.
It's going to
be tough with the like yellow and purple that they have.
Yellow and purple.
Why? Because so Bulldogs are always red, white and blue?
It feels very Harry Potter to me.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
There's no purple in Harry Potter. You're like yellow.
Old boys, Harry
Raven,
Potter.
Ravenclaw?
Really
what Ravenclaw got it?
Ravenclaw blue and grey.
Is there a chance you're playing Quidditch?
The funny thing is that I'm pretty sure one of the songs has got willows in it, which is pretty reminiscent of Harry Potter.
It is, isn't it?
Wind in the willows.
Yeah, the Whomping Willow.
Oh, yeah. There we go. All right.
No plugs for me.
We're 15 seconds away from an hour. Thank you, Will, for coming along. Thank you, Tom, for being my co-host.
Yeah, and finding a venue.
Yeah. And
thank you for that. That's very close to my house, which I very much appreciate.
Are we gonna beat the Lions on Saturday?
Yes.
I mean, I hope so.
Cool. Yes. Right? Locked in. Bye.
Before I get on my way, riding on past where the doggies play. Oh.
Today's episode was proudly brought to you by 8-Star Energy, creating energy for the future and power you can count on.
What they follow them on Facebook. 8-Star Energy.
Way out of Footscray. There's a grinding and a groove, and when I go there, line sticks tail in my underwear. What the hell did I just find? What they say. There's no fast way.